In this episode of The Ownership Economy, Jahid and I speak with Sasha Keller from Recursive Labs. Sasha is an entrepreneur with experience building multi-sided digital marketplaces. The experience of building a home services marketplace and his unsuccessful attempt to convince his existing venture capital investors in that business to allocate ownership rights to vendors set him on the journey towards Web3. He's now exploring a business model that allocates ownership rights to users based on key contributory events that help a business scale. This episode is a great listen for entrepreneurs that are thinking about the right time to add ownership rights for stakeholders. We hope you enjoy the episode. Well, Sasha, welcome to the pod. Thanks for joining us.
Well, hi. Thanks for having me.
So we normally start these off. We like to get a bit of detail on kind of your origin story and where you came from and how you kind of got to the Web3 or crypto blockchain space. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. So actually my journey sort of started in Eastern Germany, and where I left home when I was 16, and I grew up in one of the largest commie block settlements in East Germany. So really blue collar, and I always wanted to get out of there. So I moved out when I was 16 and then went to England, went to school, went to university there, spent almost 7 years there. And, you know, throughout those pretty formative years there, I was lucky enough to get a spot at university at Cass Business School. And what intrigued me back then, I still remember this, looking back at the curriculum, was systems theory, which I had no idea what it was. But I signed up for it and I got in. And, you know, my academic background is in systems theory, systems thinking, which is a complexity science. And I wrote my thesis in 2009 on business model design using biomimicry. So this was before Osterwalder's business model canvas was popular. You know, but back then the business model concept wasn't really established as a way to sort of organize. And yeah, I really found the idea of, you know, copying from nature interesting and applying that to how we organize. So I've been basically thinking about ownership and business models since 2009, my university years. And the last sort of 12 years, what I've been doing is building companies. So I've had two companies before this one. The first one was 20, which is a software as a service company. And I was very young and didn't know what I was doing, arrogant on top of it. So really bad combo. And, you know, there was a steep learning curve. The Brits have a good expression, smooth seas don't make a good captain. So I think that's how I would sum it up. Company's still around in the cloud printing space. I learned a lot about like the basics of building startups, raising capital there. And then after that, built a home services marketplace, which was a multi-sided marketplace, also venture capital funded. And we're working with the big brands like Amazon, Vodafone, Gardena. And basically what we were offering is white glove installation services at a fixed price. So you could buy something on Amazon, add the installation service with one click to the purchase. And then using our platform model, the product would be shipped to our partners. And those would then do the last mile delivery and installation. So, you know, over the last 12 years, basically I've been honing this model of a new organizational system that would essentially allow us to sort of, change the entire economic system by changing its basic building block. And especially in the last 2-3 years, you know, those concepts and ideas have become a little bit clearer. And now I think with the, you know, not just the innovation in the blockchain space, but also, you know, the inflection point we've hit in terms of attention and adoption, like some of the stuff that I've been thinking about and trying is finally like usable and implementable. And so June of last year, I went out and raised capital from a platform, a venture VC firm in Europe. They invested, well, they've got a couple of unicorns in their portfolio. Gorillas is probably one people know. And we raised quite a sizable pre-seed. And what we've done the last year is basically, I tried to put some of the ideas into a workable product that helps companies start on that path from being a traditional organization using equity to becoming an organization that helps, that is based around sharing ownership, right? So the key question there being, how do you get and keep core contributors, whether they're employees or users or community? And how do you transition the underlying organization that you have, which is locked into governance and cap table, that is not based on sharing ownership, into one that in a stepwise fashion gets you there to sharing ownership, right? So that's sort of the journey in a nutshell. And we're excited to talk to you guys and happy to sort of go in on a lot more detail on some of this.
So for a VC that kind of backed an organization like Gorillaz, what was the attraction of this model?
I think in this particular case, they had already invested in a security tokenization company, which I think was a little bit ahead of its market, but certainly on the right track. And so they had an appetite for this sort of change, right? And I think the unique thing about Atlantic is that, especially and the partner, Christoph Mayer, is that we share this worldview where, you know, we believe VC scaling and being sort of having a steward ownership or nonprofit motivation at the same time isn't there. It's not a dichotomy. It's not mutually exclusive. So I think that is sort of where we were aligned on. And basically what I told them is that, you know, I think it's clear that the economic system needs to change. And I think that we have a unique insight here from organizational cybernetics systems theory. And that is, if you change the basic building block in a way that this basic building block doesn't think in dichotomies, but instead uses, combines this ambition to scale, like the blitz scaling idea that you have in the classic VC platform world, but you combine it with some of the, you know, ideas that you would typically, put in the camp around nonprofits, steward ownership, alternative ownership models, right? So I think that's what got them excited about it. And yeah, we started working together in June last year.
Cool. And kind of, I guess, one question before we go in, or a couple of questions before we go into the actual business model itself, the experience of starting these two ventures, were the things that happened during those ventures that made you feel that this move towards kind of a stewardship ownership model, or a model where different stakeholders had access to ownership and or governance rights, was important? Like, what was the, yeah, or was it more kind of the, well, I guess the answer is yes, but I was going to ask, like, how much was it that experience, and how much was it kind of the academic background?
That's a great question. So this academic background made me scan for like ways to get there, like throughout the last decade, I think, but it only started coming together through, you know, where I had this aha moment. I think it was around 2017, where I was just starting to build this multi-sided home services marketplace, right? And what happened there is it's a supply constrained market, right? So this was in the DACH market, so Germany, Austria, Switzerland. And because of the educational system, the vocational education system, there's quite a lot of, you know, everybody sent to business school to get a degree, and like there's not enough trade professionals, not enough plumbers, electricians, and so on. And that put us immediately into the position of having to convince a plumber that's doing really well to work with us, right? Why would they? They're comfortable. Their order books were full, probably in a lot of cases, 1.5 years out. And then we come along and we're like, hey, we got this platform working with the big brands. Fair enough, you can't acquire those, but you know, what's in it for you, right? And the traditional platform model really wasn't strong enough of a sales pitch, or strong enough in terms of the motivation. And this was around the ICO craze. So I came up with this idea of basically sharing ownership with them. We never executed any of it. The board didn't approve at all, which, you know, what I learned there was, you know, we talked to the partners and we got a lot of good feedback. Couldn't change our own cap table and governance model. So I really experienced that firsthand. And the venture capital firm that was invested there didn't really want to make that move. And yeah, that's the, sort of the first time where I saw that, you know, A, there's value in it, and B, there's a couple of big challenges. You know, it's transitioning an existing legal entity into, even if it's a platform, into something that shares ownership. And the idea back then was to say, hey, if you work with us, you get shared ownership in the platform. And then we were going to sell some of the token offering to big brands to generate capital. And this capital was used for shared services that the plumbers and electricians and all the trade partners could sort of govern in a decentralized fashion. Did worked it out to some degree, couldn't implement it. Then I left that company. And then the other thing that really played into it beyond those, the academic background and sort of the experience with this whole marketplace, was I was advising founders on organizational design. And one of them was a blitz scaling indoor farming company. It's one of the big ones. And reached out to the founders there, and they were struggling to handle the growth, right? And they think at this point they've raised, I don't know, several hundreds of millions. And back then they wanted to figure out, how can you have this business in a box model where you can like grow in a decentralized fashion, but without having to sort of set up all the local entities individually. So that was another big piece for me where I put together, you know, this, I had the basic building block and the design of this like local operational node. And then through this consulting engagement with this company, I figured out some of the you know, change management stuff that's needed. You know, how do you talk to people about what a network organization is, and how do you sort of, yeah, help an organization make that shift, right? So I think that was sort of the last piece. And yeah, and then I put together the pitch, and in June last year, we got started.
Cool. And what was it about? So when you're working on the multi-sided platform for home services, what scared the VC firm that had invested?
Well, we were struggling to grow revenue quickly, which was not just supply constrained. The issue wasn't just the fact that there weren't enough partners, but also I think we bit off a little bit too much, in the sense that what we were doing was also innovating on the services side, right? So we were doing fairly complex services where the basket value was a little bit higher. So not installation services like furniture installation. We were also doing solar panel installations, or, you know, lawn mowing robot installations. So the service design, we called it back then, part of the sales process and customer onboarding process, was quite complex. What I mean to say by that is, if you want to offer a complex service with a one-click purchase model, then you really need to figure out and nail what that purchasing experience looks like, and what the service experience on site looks like. So we basically had to design every brand that we acquired that had a product that needed to be installed. We had to design a unique service experience, which also touched on customer experience, and then put it into Salesforce as an SKU, right? And with that SKU, you don't just have price and margin embedded into it, but also the briefing for the local partner, right? For quality assurance purposes. So it was quite complex to make work. And I think the model in the end is a tricky one, because the more complex the service gets, the bigger the basket value. But then, you know, you're getting into territory where the brands tend to almost think they can do it themselves, right? Or you do it with specialist contributors. So, you know, I learned a lot there about that is all flowing into Recursive now from an operational, you know, perspective. Like, I did the partner management, rotated, you know, through the partner management, and I was obviously CEO and raised capital for it. So very helpful for what I'm doing now.
And so the VCs themselves are like, don't distract yourself with sharing ownership, because you have
I think the
growth metrics, and we don't really understand this. Or was it legal issue, or was it more just a greed issue? They didn't want to kind of re-trigger the cap table. Was it a we want you to focus issue? Like, what kind of scared these traditional investors away from this model? At the same time, really, that you had smart contracts being created and a lot of money crowding into ventures like Ethereum or platforms like Ethereum.
Yeah. I mean, thanks for bringing me back to that. Yeah. So I think it was a case of, what are you doing? You know, like, you're not focused, like, you have enough operational issues, and sort of, you haven't figured out how to scale. Why are you now coming up with this? What felt to them like a completely different organization, right? So like an extreme version of a pivot, I think, is what they heard. And I think that put them off. And it, you know, the other issues, I think, were the model that I described earlier, like, you know, the sort of flaws of the model itself.
Interesting. Okay. And so you're in Germany right now, and in Germany, there's actually a fairly good regulatory environment for workers, right? So you have this concept called co-determination, which we don't really have in the United States or in Spain, where I am right now. I guess there's a little bit of it in Spain, but can you describe what co-determination is? Or this right to kind of participate in the board once a company hits a certain size in Germany?
Sure. I mean, I think it's a great example of the difference between sort of mainland continental capitalism and sort of Anglo-American capitalism, where I think, you know, solidarity is more embedded in the continental European idea of it. And yeah, I mean, I grew up in that kind of system, right, where it's almost natural for employees to have more rights. And for them, you know, organized labor hasn't been as systematically dismantled as in Anglo-American capitalism. So, you know, I see some of the big platforms like Gorillas or like these other 5-minute startups. I mean, the code of determination is certainly legally more present and culturally probably more understood in Germany, but the platforms have still found ways to work around that. You know, like there's the Neobank N26 that have had quite a bit of issues. There's Gorillas, Delivery Hero, like these worker collectives that are now rising up and complaining about companies basically circumventing their obligation to set up, you know, to allow their partners to organize. So while, yeah, I agree, it's there and it's certainly more embedded than in Anglo-American circles, but it's platforms still found a way to not honor that obligation.
So effectively, there's this law, right, that essentially says that in Germany, once a company gets to over 500 employees, they get a third of the representation on the board, and over 2,000 employees, there's half of representation on the board. And the philosophy here is that, and there's been a lot of quantitative work that's been done on this, on firm performance and how this affects firm performance. And it's, you know, it's marginal, but it's normally pretty positive, because you have this kind of alignment between firms and the individual employees. And this is where I thought it was interesting that your pre-seed investor was Gorillas. And so for people who don't know Gorillas, Gorillas is one of these, you know, food delivery startups, right? That has, is now a unicorn. And I would imagine most of their business model is trying to figure out how to make sure that people aren't employees, right? Where they're effectively gig workers, so that they don't have to abide by these laws, right? And in your startup, or one of your previous startups, you had a similar issue where you had these suppliers for the home services marketplace, or these people that were essentially doing installation services, or the services model, that weren't technically employees either, right? And so they don't really fit into this traditional employee ownership model. And this is where the concept of OwnCo comes in, which is effectively there's these other stakeholders that contribute value to a firm that current regulatory environments don't cater to. So walk us through what OwnCo is and kind of describe the challenge it's solving, and tell us a little bit about the business model.
Sure. So OwnCo is effectively the product that we've built with the company called Recursive, right? So Recursive has this macro vision of reducing inequality, because we think that holds the key to saving both the natural world, but also, you know, creating an economic system that works for the people. And the micro is basically this pragmatic SaaS tool, which has quite a well-rounded stack, which I can expand on in a minute, that we are bringing to market now, right? So the idea is to, in the long run, reduce inequality by helping people create organizations, own codes, that work off of a different blueprint that doesn't lead to the same outcome that the incorporate leads to all the time, which is the centralization of wealth and power in the hands of a few, right? So the OwnCo is basically based off of this blueprint. And what it sort of, what the product, the go-to-market product is focused on, is helping established platforms solve the biggest pain point that they currently have. And that is, how do you get and keep specialist contributors, or people that don't really need to work with the platform? How do you share ownership of your existing entity in a way that works within the legal and financial system, but still gives you the power of crypto tokens, right? So essentially what you can use OwnCo for as a platform is, you can say, I have this flywheel that I want to use to align incentives between myself and the platform. And to give you an example from our customer base, there's a fitness community. They want to get the top trainers to work inside of their space. They design an equity flywheel to be able to do that, which works in a way that it says, if you use the space, you get more equity. If the platform grows, the value of your equity grows, everybody wins. Problem is, they can't use the incorporated for that. So instead, what they're using is OwnCo, because OwnCo connects this flywheel with your equity, but using tokens. So the pain that you've now solved is, you can get the top contributors to join, because it's no longer a separate thing. Like the boundary of the organization sort of dissolve a little bit, and you're sharing ownership, and it's a win-win situation, right? Now, that's the go-to-market product. And we think there's a lot more companies that are looking for solutions that, you know, fix some of the rigidness of equity, but, you know, also give them some of the benefits and features from crypto without the legal and regulatory risk, right? And without having to go all in and make the full jump and commitment to be on mainnet and like having a token. And like, I mean, there's still, what we hear from customers, there's still so many things that are off-putting there. So we see ourselves as this bridge, taking you from a traditional organization to an OwnCo. And then the things you mentioned about governance, I mean, that for us comes later, right? So we're pretty pragmatic. We pick people up where they are today. And like most of the companies we work with, they're not thinking about sharing, like distributing governance yet. So I think that's more vision than it is reality in the product at this stage.
Okay. And so when an organization comes to you, like given the experience that you had in your own startup, where you had this challenge around, as most startups do, getting to product market fit, What do you think is the right time for an organization to be thinking about driving incentives for particular value creating stakeholders in terms of the organizational this journey? You had trouble once you had raised VC, right? Where you had essentially traditional venture investors didn't really understand it. Is it at formation? Is it any time? Like, what have you learned over the past year?
I love your questions. You're getting right to the core of it. Like, so yeah, I mean, what I learned was that once you're locked into a cap table and governance system, it becomes more difficult, right? I mean, back then that was my first pass. So I didn't know how to communicate the change and how to back it up. And I had other issues that with the model itself and the company itself. So if that is present as an established company, then yeah, it's just more difficult for you to convince existing shareholders to make that change, right? So when would be a good time to think about user ownership? So at formation is obviously ideal, right? But here's the issue with a lot of the alternative ownership models or Web3 stuff. You need to be pragmatic and you need to find a good balance between the traditional stuff that might not be ideal and in terms of being morally correct, but it still works, right? So let's take an example. Command and control leadership is like this male dominated view of leading is obviously way outdated and like not the right thing to do. But sometimes in some situations, it's innate or natural for a person to act that way. And it's just easier. So what I'm trying to say is, as a young company, if you're figuring out product market fit, and you're figuring out revenue, like why also think about tokens and sharing ownership on top of that? There needs to be a very strong case for that. And that is typically only there if sharing ownership is core to the way your business works. Just adding a token is not going to fix your business. Just sharing ownership is not going to fix your model. So unless it's core to it, right? So if you're a young company starting out, sure, make the change as early as possible for moral reasons, but also because it's going to help you grow bigger and faster. If you're a mature company, what we've learned from my experience and like from working with like lots and lots of customers in the last year and lots of like creators, like we've done a shit ton of research and co-designed basically what we have today in Onco. What we learned there is this on-ramp to Web3 technology, it needs to be pragmatic and people up where they are. So what we've done is we've designed the system in a way that you can start on that path to tokenization and to sharing ownership, but without having to commit to mainnet, right? So you can test your token, you can create your token flywheel using templates, which means you don't have to go through the conceptual work, which, you know, even serial founders struggle designing cap tables, equity, sharing ownership just in a traditional incorporated, never mind adding a token flywheel. Right? This is just makes it even more complex. So we solve that issue. Like, you don't have the expertise. Here's a template. Modify that. We help you with that. And so that's an easier way to onboard. Okay. So what's the goal you want to achieve? Here's the token flywheel. Here's the benefit over using equity that you're probably going to get from it. So that's sort of the first step to helping them change. And then the next step is the concern around, okay, but if I go on mainnet, what does this mean? What if I want to roll something back? You know, so some of the core promises of crypto are actually hindering its adoption, right? And I think just a brief detour, like crypto is noticing this, right? Where we have like soulbound tokens now, or this idea, right? Or some of the core tenets of what the space is supposed to be about, like we have to rethink, which is a good thing. So I think the second step then is in our solution, you don't have to go to mainnet. So you can deploy in a private node environment, which means you get the benefits of tokenization. And if and when you want to switch onto mainnet, you can make that migration. So this is where we've embedded this idea of taking people where they are and bringing them into crypto, but in a stepwise fashion as a mature company, where we've designed it around the reality that, you know, you don't know how to do it. You're scared of what will happen, but essentially in the long run, you want to get there. So that's a mature company. You would follow that path. And I think that's makes the most sense.
I want to ask you a little bit more about that, kind of with this dichotomy you fashioned here, which, you know, I actually think does exist in my experience. You know, basically, you mentioned taking them onto crypto and toward this road towards crypto ownership, crypto primitives as a coordination mechanism for what they're doing. How do you think about, you know, because we had, just to give you a little background, we had on our very first episode, Pia Mancini. She came on, she years ago had started Open Collective, and they had basically over many years decided on becoming a steward-owned company, and they explored so many different sort of areas, right? But they didn't really, and I'm not putting words in your mouth here, I'm not saying you're saying crypto is the solution, but I'm curious to know, when you meet these companies out there who are like maybe a little more mature, do you meet them with this, hey, we can give you this platform that's built on cryptographic protocols that lets you do this, that, and the other? Or are they more curious about shared ownership, or is it both?
So, no, actually, it's the opposite. They're not. Crypto is not a strong sales proposition for the average citizen. I mean, like, ask your barista what they think of tokens, and they'll probably tell you. And the same goes for companies. Like, there's actually convincing to do. Or you need to clearly explain what the benefit in the long run of being running a token infrastructure is, right? So I think that's where the market is at. But once they see that, then, you know, then they're hooked. But yeah, the motivation for shared ownership is more important, right? So they think from their business goals, like this fitness community, what they want to do is they want to get work with the top trainers in LA, right? These guys are comfortable. Why should they join?
Gotcha.
Sharing ownership, whether that's a token or something else, doesn't matter. And this is, we actually tap into that, right? The first step is not necessary. You can tokenize fiat budget. You can tokenize growth budget, which is a comfortable first step. And then from there, you can use our system to expand the use of tokens.
Got it. And so what you're seeing then, this is exactly what I was hinting at, is I'm pretty sure in my experience too, not a lot of people are coming at this going like, I need a token. And that's something that on the pod we've really dug into in some past episodes where we've really said, and Martin, I think, can attest this as well in his experience, that you really only need a token in a few specific situations. It's not really all about the token. And then getting back to the social organizational layer, right? You mentioned something in your last answer around, you know, when they get it, right, they're fully bought in when they get it. What is the it that they really get, right? You mentioned a number of things that I'm really curious to get super specific on, it because the fitness example makes a ton of sense, right? Where they're like, hey, that's a super precarious business that's really driven by, I'm sure if you graph this, it's probably got something like power law returns where 10% of the people online are getting 90% of the revenue, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, walk us back a little bit where a business like the fitness one or other ones, what is it in your experience so far that really makes people go, oh shit, you know, the answer to this is shared ownership and the network effects that come from that?
Yeah. So this brings us back to our vision, right? Which is about, you know, reminding people of the fact that solidarity is innately human, right? And to make that concrete, what we tell them is, okay, so you know, you might not need a token on day one, but once you move on to our infrastructure, you have an amazing user experience and you can share ownership. And what you can do now is you can start diversifying the treasury that you created. So initially, this treasury was just loaded with fiat tokens, right? Which means you can do that with a normal database. It's just a credit. But what happens now? People are now co-owners, right? Both parties have learned about what this new organization looks like, right? So the company and the users, and everybody's getting comfortable with it, right? So that's the first thing. You're changing behavior. You're changing people's understanding of how a company works. Our users have wallets, which are classic. It's a web app UI, right? And we're custodian. You can switch that later if you want. But this is how we start. So it's easy to onboard. We have community pages built in. So what that's good for is explaining to users what ownership even is. You know, when we first started out on this journey, we realized that people don't, like, no one knows what ownership is and there's no accepted definition. So that's where it starts. And this is sort of some of the benefits you see pretty quickly once you start using Onco. But then in the long run, you know, why does it make sense to use a token or to be on DLT? I believe in crypto, and I always have. I think there's a lot that still needs to change, but I mean, 100% bought in. But what gets them excited is the idea of what's in the name of the company. The system is recursive, which means what we will do is we will share ownership of Recursive, the developer of Onco, with all of our customers. So that means we are also going to progressively decentralize, if you want to use a technical term, and customers can do that in their Onco ecosystem as well. That's why the company is called Recursive. It is just the same blueprint. It doesn't matter what resolution you look at. And that gets them excited, because what that means is they can now expand this initial fiat token treasury that was born out of a connection from the existing legal entity into something that is much bigger and over time might become independent, which is a different model to progressive decentralization as we know it today. So you can take an Onco, diversify the treasury, and this can be managed by the trainers, the fitness trainers now, right? And governed. And you can decide on new locations, you can decide on fitness equipment to buy, whatever, right? So that's sort of what gets them really excited.
I like that because it has a parallel to, you know, kind of like real world, almost producer co-ops, right? Where they're basically sitting there saying, hey, in times of plenty or in times of little, we actually can have ways to and launch new products, support folks who aren't doing so well. So that's interesting.
Yes.
Very cool.
Yeah. That's what I'm most excited about. You know, I think it starts. So if you want to change the world, you change the basic building block, right? And I think what no one's has done, because I don't think people have looked at biomimicry enough, is you know, what nature does with DNA is it has a blueprint that reproduces the same thing again and again, but it allows for so much variability that you still evolve, right? And this is basically applied to OwnCo, right? So OwnCo is hopefully going to evolve into this DAO blueprint, which is based on heterarchy, which combines local autonomy with central control, right? Which is something that academically people have figured out, but it hasn't been operationalized, right? And all of the underpinning sort of work for OwnCo and the recursive protocol that will be the future is this viable system model by Stafford Bear, right? Which combines these two parts. And then this meta governance system that manages the entire network is basically the shared global treasury from the DAO Web3 space. And yeah, I mean, that goes into the nation state territory, right? The network nation state, which I think Balaji has recently written on. So I think the viable system model is definitely the blueprint that is a good starting point for that kind of end game, right? Which is what we want to get to.
So just if we can go back to the fitness model, I want to make sure that I totally understand, right? This is a venture-backed startup or it's what stage is it at?
I'm not sure I'm allowed to disclose their funding, but it's a fitness community in LA and they're still a young company.
Okay.
Okay.
So they come to you and they say, or you seek them out or somehow they get in touch with you and they say, we want to essentially create a tokenized community or we want to drive incentives around X goal.
Well, actually, they didn't come to us with a token idea.
Yeah. Okay. And so when they came to you, what were they looking for? Or did you approach them?
No, it was, I was actually introduced. And what they wanted to do is share ownership, right? And then they designed the equity flywheel themselves, actually, right? So they were a little bit further than most companies, I think, in terms of that thinking, but they couldn't quite implement that. And then they were looking at what's out there, right? But it certainly wasn't a case of we need a token, right? I think most of the people that I've spoken with that start that way, we need a token, that tends to come from a situation where their business model is not quite working and they think tokens are going to fix it, right? So I'm always wary of that. People that start with like this fitness platform, you know, I need to share ownership and I want to make it a core part of my business. And here's the flywheel that I want to use. That's a better starting point.
Okay.
So that's where they came from. Yeah.
Cool. And so when they came to you, right, they had an existing ownership structure and my understanding of the business is effectively you said, how much do you want to give to this particular stakeholder, your fitness instructors? Is that right?
Yeah. So I'm going to give you the macro stuff because I can't disclose the exact specific.
Yeah. Or if there's like, if we could just make it like a case study of whatever, right? It could be your old business, right? Like with the service providers. Yeah.
Yeah. So think of the home services marketplace. So what you would say is I want to share ownership in order to grow in a way that aligns incentives between me and my trade partners. In order to do that, I want to share ownership. Now, then the question is, what do you mean by ownership? And this is where we help people figure it out, right? So ownership is a pretty broad term. Philosophically speaking, it just means control over something, right? Essentially, like I don't want to own something in terms of I have to take care of it. In the end, what people want when they say ownership is they want control over the rules of the system because then you have it. So that is not what we're doing, because in the end, what people want to do when they want to share ownership is they want to share economic benefits. And you know, there's a couple of proxies that people use to do that. So it could be options, stock options. It could be actual equity, or in our case, what we did is we looked at like, what do people actually want to share when they say sharing ownership? Like, do you need to have a security token? Do you need to look at options and tokenizing that? Because in the end, what exchanges hands? It is, if you ignore governance for a minute, it is an economic benefit, money, right? So we define ownership pragmatically. And we say it's just money that changes hands, right? So the companies come to us and we help them understand that. And then that what they see is, okay, if I want to share ownership in terms of exit proceeds, then I will use an RSU in the US, restricted stock units, which grant an economic benefit. Or in Europe, it's a VSOP, virtual stock option plan, which our definition of ownership is sharing economic benefits. And we found the easiest and most pragmatic way to do that in terms of legal and financial system. And that is RSUs in the US and VSOP in Europe. And that means we also sidestep the issue of regulation, because it's both models essentially compensation, right?
Okay.
But it still gives you the benefit of sharing ownership. Yeah.
Okay. So I really want to hit on this point, because this is what I was trying to get to. So, mm-hmm. effectively, you are not creating a model whereby there is a token that is built for the community based on their specific incentive program. You're essentially instead creating almost like a reward program that in a software system that allocates those rewards based on existing legal frameworks that allow you to have these particular entities, whether they're individuals or firms, participate in upside based on actions that they take. Is that right?
That's right. That's the starting point. Okay. And what we help you do in that first step is we create a treasury for you. And this treasury then allows you to expand the use cases of crypto, right? And that's on our product roadmap. There's like more token types. So, but generally how we work is we take inspiration from the really innovative stuff from Web3, and then we make sure that it's actually usable and we can onboard the average company to it. So yeah, that's the starting point. But from there, you can go and really, it opens up this universe of Web3 features through integrations or, you know, the stuff that we build.
And so are the rewards being paid in fiat or are they being paid in tokens? Like, is the token a nominal currency within the system to denote value, or is it an actual token tied to a particular blockchain?
It's a mirror cap table system at the moment, right? So you basically take a 5% of your existing legal entity, for instance, and you tokenize that. You can mint as many tokens as you want, and then you can distribute them based on merit or performance or contribution automatically by integrating with your Salesforce, your Shopify, whatever, by API, right? And that is automatically pushed into the wallets of your community through Onco. It's all white label. And from there, you can give users a choice, right? You can either buy back the tokens and burn them, so with fiat, right? And then they can cash out, or you expand the scope of the token and the treasury, which goes into the direction of like a mini DAO, where you say, okay, do you also want to vote? Then you need to keep your token that you've earned, right? And then, that's sort of where we're at the moment.
Okay. And so that makes a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. And so the model here is essentially, the ultimate goal would be to try to figure out how to do this in a way that you have kind of full decentralization, you're actually issuing tokens. Mm-hmm. But really mm-hmm. what's happening here today is that you are allocating based on these rewards programs and then assigning that to some sort of legally compliant instrument, depending on the jurisdiction that you're in.
Exactly.
And why do you think that this needs to, like, what if you're not using the fungibility of the token, what does blockchain actually bring to this that you couldn't do through Carta or through another platform like that?
Well, that's exactly the point, right? There's no, so it might seem like the token isn't necessary and it's not initially, but what we have on the roadmap is what helps us convince customers to join. And that is this promise of starting easy and pragmatically, right? But still having the opportunity to tap into the entire benefit of Web3 in the long run, right? You can't do it the other way around. You can't like take an existing company and tell them, hey, shut everything down and become a DAO now on Aragon. It just doesn't work that way, right? And instead, you need to take the existing economic system and transform it in a stepwise fashion. And that initially doesn't seem like a very like sensical thing to do, but it's the only path, I think.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think it'll be interesting, right? Because of what effectively these platforms did, right? So if I understand your model correctly, what you said is like, we live in this kind of gray regulatory time period where the regulators are not actually able to afford the talent that is creating this new reality
yes.
around tokens,
yes.
right? And so the private sector, or whatever you want to call the sector, it can be everything from kind of the self-sovereign, completely anarchist individual who, you know, all the way, sorry, Jahed, all the way through to the...
That's not me. I'm not one of those people. Don't you dare.
No.
As soon as you do the self-sovereign stuff, I'm like, oh, vomit, please.
But all the way through to, you know, the traditional kind of, I don't know, employee at a traditional company, right? But I guess like the point that you're making is that, look, there's this regulatory environment. There's a need to solve the problem that I had when I was in my when I, Sasha, was starting my startup, where I wanted to incentivize these stakeholders that didn't fit the criteria of an employee. And there's really two ways to go around that. One is to essentially create a DAO and challenge all notions of organizational design and the trade-offs between a command and control structure allowing you to move faster and a more distributed ownership structure allowing you to have kind of the principles that I think we all want within a capitalist system. And you've made this choice to essentially say, we're going to start in a legally compliant way, and then we're going to move to modalities that allow for some of the more nuanced forms of allocating ownership and governance rights that are not legally compliant today. Whereas if you look at the players that like really made it in the traditional model, they essentially, in the Web 2 platforms, right? If we think of what you're building as like pipes for Web 3 or Web 2 to Web 3 transition, the traditional players essentially said, screw the regulations. We're able to grow really quickly, and the regulators couldn't keep up. And then by the time that they had these dominant business models started then afterwards caring about the regulations, right? So I think it'll be interesting to see. I think your approach is smart, but I think it'll be interesting to see for the, you know, which model plays out. Is it the model that you're working towards by starting in a kind of a compliant way? Or are there going to be other models that just kind of continue this freewheeling environment and push the envelope in terms of distributing these tokens? Because again, I don't know, you know, if you look at what's happening in the EU and in the US, I don't know if the regulators are going to be able to keep up given kind of the pace of innovation. So I don't think there's a question there. It's more the conversation has kind of stimulated thinking for me. So it's really helpful to walk through a pilot today. And you mentioned that people don't really care about, in the first kind of get-go, these stakeholders don't really care about anything except economic value. They don't really care about governance. So can you talk us a little bit through the Brain Trust case study and what you found compelling about that? It's something that you write about on your own website as kind of an example of how this is powerful. They've really put governance front and center with their launch. But what did you find kind of successful about their launch strategy and their tokenization? And what were some of the downsides that you've seen? And how does that compare to the experience that you've done that, you know, with your own clients over the course of the past year and trying to figure this out?
Sure. I mean, I think you guys are certainly bigger experts on this, but what we found interesting about this case and why we sort of referenced it is because it helped us put some credence behind the model that we're using as well, which is you pick people up where they are and then you bring them to crypto and you don't initially put that front and center, right? So, I mean, they were on the Robson testnet for quite a while, which, you know, our system helps companies set up private chain environments, right? And then we take them, give them the opportunity to change that. And that's certainly one thing that, you know, helped us sort of put some credibility behind our sort of customer onboarding and deployment model, because it's similar in that sense. Not quite, but that's the first thing. The second that, you know, they found a model, I think they had like six legal entities initially, right? That sort of worked together to create this platform, which is now just like a set of smart contracts. And they managed to make an actual switch from, you know, a VC investment that I'm sure they made their return to what's becoming a really promising user-owned platform. I mean, they're making some big changes now. The fee converter, I think, was the last thing. And they're going into shared services. So I think it's just a great case. And I wish them, you know, all the success in the world. I think they've really opened up this space. And yeah, for me, it's just validation that there is an opportunity to take existing companies and to turn them into something that's user-owned. So that's the main thing for me that I find interesting.
So one of the things that came out of kind of the analysis that we did on Brain Trust. So they talk about there's, you know, these 700,000 people that have joined their community or 60,000 active people in their community, right? But the reality is there's only 3,500 holders of the Brain Trust token today. So the vast majority of the people that were issued rewards sold their tokens quickly and no longer have any sort of ownership within the entity. And so it was kind of a quick, you know, a way to quickly get this financial benefit, but not a way to continually engage at least the majority of the people that were brought onto the platform over the course of the last year. Is that something that's come up in terms of your own client work where you have clients wondering, you know, is this just a way to jumpstart my community? Or like for the, like, again, the fitness example, I know you can't talk about it, but I would think that you would want these instructors kind of involved for a long period of time, right?
Sure. I mean, if the benefit your governance token offers is limited, or if the governance system that you have in place is like skewed towards whales, then why should I keep the inverted commas governance token? That's, I think, what I would say, right? So what's the under, I mean, it's just a means to an end, all of this. So what's the underlying governance and that you're sharing, right? If that's not strong enough, then let people who sell that token, they will do that, right? So I think this is more extreme in Web3 where, I mean, let's be real, a lot of these governance tokens, I did a lot of teardowns of some of the big DeFi protocols in particular, where the governance systems are, you know, heavily skewed towards whales. And just the mere fact that a governance token is also a financial instrument cannot work at all. So I think that's the biggest thing that needs to change, is like governance tokens need to be disconnected from economic benefit. You cannot have two in one. Otherwise, you're just rebuilding the incorporated. And, you know, as to the particulars, I don't know if you were part of the Brain Trust community, and I'm just making this up, right? You were supporting it for 3 years, and you're, by the time it launches, you're done with it and you want to leave. Why not sell your token and get some reward for all of the work you've put in if you no longer believe in getting value out of sharing shared ownership going forward, right? You know, our sort of view of governance is, just to keep it short, I think the way we think about governance at the moment is completely off, in the sense that governance is always talked about in terms of voting, and like it's primarily choice. You know, it's like you control the menu, you control the choices. Like, look at the, you know, voting forums. Like, someone comes up with a proposal, and you know, it starts there with the issues, and then it's about like hurdle rate, like how many tokens I need to actually be able to vote. So for me, governance needs to, like, the way we think about governance needs to completely change away from what it is today to it being about participatory design that leads to situations where you barely need to have governance in place in the first place. And yeah, that would change how these tokens work as well. So, you know, hopefully we can sort of figure this out together with our customers. You know, how do you build a governance system that rethinks what governance is, using, you know, learnings from our past, but also systems theory, systems thinking. Yeah.
I want to highlight one thing that you said there, which was ownership and governance need to be completely kind of separated. Can you begin a little bit on that?
Yeah. So our vision of this future economic system is one that, at its core, what we're saying is things need to be based on fractals. So you can no longer have these monolithic large entities. What you need instead, because this makes governance difficult, right? Like the thing we talked at the beginning of the podcast where, you know, after a certain size, 500 people, whatever, you get, you know, people have to set up, you know, have to allow for organized labor. I mean, that's all good, but in a monolithic system, it just becomes complex. And the only way we figured out how to solve like these collective action problems in large monolithic organizations is with hierarchy. And that's worked well up to this point, but it's not going to get us to a better future. So what we want to do is we want to change that by making sure that there's a maximum size to these organizational units, right? And that, let's say it's Dunbar's number or wherever communication breaks down, and then it needs to replicate. Which means governance now becomes a case of it being nested. You know, it's not, you're not governing this hierarchical in a hierarchical fashion, but instead you use, I mean, it's too long for this podcast, but you use a different type of governance system, which is based on fractals, and where you need to use a different way to account for value. That's the last part. That's part of our sort of vision for the future, where the commensurability of value is the big problem here, right? So how do you compare the value that's been contributed by, let's say, a finance person, like a finance manager, versus a sales rep, right? You would say that's basically not possible. But you need to figure out a way to have commensurability of value to make everyone's contribution like comparable without ignoring the context that it was created in, so that you can then base influence on governance based on contribution to value. And this is the core thing we need to figure out, the entire space, not just us. And if you crack that, you can then distribute governance based on contribution to value, which would change everything, right? Then it's no longer governance based on your economic influence. Power.
So are you saying that kind of salaries don't do that? Or are you saying that salaries don't target the stakeholders that you want to actually kind of engage with in the platform because they're focused on employees?
Well, salaries, you mean as a proxy of like your actual value as a person inside the organization? Yeah, I mean, they're pretty shitty proxies, I think. it depends how bad the organizational culture is, right? They're a fair enough proxy, but not good enough, I think. And it's an inequality is probably the best example to illustrate that, right? Like the CEO in this case would have a lot more say over things than the, you know, some junior person. What I'm trying to say is in a complex system, like an organization, right? Like, or use an analogy, like your body, like, you know, everything contributes value. If I take your lungs away, you're not going to function anymore as a whole. Does that make, but the same goes for a different critical organ, you know, which one is worth more now? Which one has contributed more? Like it just becomes difficult to, you know, to put numbers on that and then to say, okay, you contributed more. And for that reason, you should have more influence. If in a complex system, it's the interactions that create viability, like the interactions, right?
Yeah, I think like to add on to that too, this harkens back to something we had in a previous pod around the incommensurability of value being that
cool.
Most of what we have in most of our notions of value are bundled up into a single metric around price, right?
Yes.
Or profit, yes. Or what have you. And so Chris Coe's Terminoma Network basically was arguing for the fact that we need to sort of decouple this abstraction. And then the other thing I wanted to comment on what you said is this notion of fractal management by fractals, or basically just mm-hmm. network for having networks that kind of nest within each other. This is a thing that's come up on quite a bit that I'd be interested in getting, you know, your feedback on, is such that we all know, like, there are a lot of models for this. There's the benevolent dictator model, right, that says
yeah,
you start
yeah.
out super early with a so-called benevolent dictator that says we're going this way, this is the thing we're building. Because at the end of the day, I sort of agree with this in that not the benevolent dictator model per se, but when you start and you share ownership right at the gate, there's nothing to share yet, right? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Nothing has value yet, right? Like,
yeah.
You want to make sure that when there is value created, there's something to spread, right? So, like, getting bogged down in how we do it exactly is not a problem. But as you said, it becomes a problem later because then you get, like, the CEO pay or what have you. And I think at this point, even with certain results in complexity science and information theory, it's very clear that central control and hierarchy create large-scale coordination, but they limit the complexity of systems at smaller scales.
Uh-huh.
So when you mention uh-huh. stuff like fractals, I love if you can give me a little bit of a peek behind the scenes, if you can, around what does your system, how do the way you folks think and the product you're building sort of reflect that for people?
Sure. So all of this is going to be encapsulated in the protocol vision and development, right? So what OwnCo is this first pragmatic step and product that we bring to market, but it's already this fractal, right? So once we have a large enough customer base, all of these OwnCos basically originated by disconnecting from existing legal entities, right? And now because they were designed in a certain way, running on our infrastructure, they can recompose spontaneously and without central control as DAOs or new companies or new networks, right? And that's sort of the long-term vision. And they can do this because what we've focused on is managing the interaction interfaces so that the composability and recomposability is actually possible in the long run. And as it relates to governance, that means the idea, right? This is not built yet, but as it relates to governance, what that means is you need to involve the higher and lower level of the organization, right? So it's recursive. So you always have a macro, micro, and meso level. And if you're in the level and focus, so let me try and find a specific example. So let's say you're a sales team, right? And your macro level is marketing, and your micro level is the customer. Then your board of your node consists of the higher and lower level and yourself. So it's three seats, so to speak. And that means you cannot decide upon the value definition, yeah, which determines your contribution to value, obviously, without the involvement of marketing and without the involvement of the customer. So you three need to sit together, define the value dimensions and value goals that you're going to work on, which means you're going to sit down, you're going to say, so dear marketing node, what is it that I need from you? Right. So you're not telling them what to do. They have local autonomy. They're semi-independent, but their output is designed, co-designed with you in mind. Right. This is the point I was trying to make earlier. Governance becoming more about participatory design as opposed to deciding and choosing. And in this meeting, you also have sales. Right. So the sales team doesn't just design this value definition with marketing, but also the customer needs to be there in that same meeting and say, hey, this is what the product is supposed to achieve. And then you get to a value definition that is agreed by all three levels. So it's fractals, it's nested. And this works at every single level, right? And that way you define the one value, that true value score is what we call it, that each node is working towards. And it gives you the measuring stick as well.
Interesting. So I think, I think it'll be interesting to have you back on when this next kind of version of the product is released. Mm-hmm. Because I think what you're trying to solve, there's a bunch of folks that are looking at it from different angles. And what you're trying to solve mm-hmm. is super, super interesting. I spent a lot of time arguing as part of this PhD process, the need to separate out ownership from governance in some of the cool. ways that you're talking about. And actually then went back to this literature strand that developed kind of in the 80s around psychology of ownership and how psychology of ownership emerges, mm-hmm. and what you need for a psychology of ownership to emerge. And you really actually need a lot of that governance. And there's some other things that you need to have this sort of return, at least within a traditional firm structure, the quantitative return that you're looking for sustained mm-hmm. over time. So whether or not this can be taken away from kind of continuous model, which you have with an RSU, right? Unless it's a goal-based mm-hmm. vest, but most of these RSUs are time-based vest, to more of a discrete model where you're incentivizing particular outcomes. I think it'll be interesting to see as we have more data, which of these models allows for what the ultimate goal is, which is to have more people participate as owners and feel like they have not only control over their lives, but are part of something that they're a community of and you know, wake up and are excited to be participating in. So we'll have to have you back on to talk more about that once you have a little bit more data, but I'm super excited to see what you build. We're getting towards the end here. How do people kind of follow your work and stay in touch on what you're thinking about and what you're up to?
So let me just say also from my side, like I'd absolutely really enjoyed this conversation. I'd love to dive deeper on any of these topics. And it's been a lot of fun. So yes, by all means, let's do another one. You can stay in touch. I'm on Twitter, Kellert. It's my surname. You can follow me there. I tweet sporadically. I've been pretty busy. The company website is ownco.org, as in owncompany.org. And yeah, we're on Discord and we're building the community in there. So feel free to drop by, or in a more traditional sense, I'm obviously available for anyone who's interested in using the product to speak at any time. Anyone who loves to talk about co-ownership, alternative ownership models, I'm always interested in a chat. Ownco.org, and then I'm at Kellert on Twitter.
Awesome. Sasha, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you guys for having me. It was really fun. My girl gave me a blow.